Cool Already Gang, welcome back to the Gutowski Files, starring Stephen Gutowski. Stephen is the founder of TheReload.com and the host of the Weekly Reload podcast. Additionally, speaking of the podcast, I should say, you had someone on this week, Stephen, and you were discussing with that guest what we talked about last week. You want to tell us what was going on over there at the Reload podcast?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that was, as we talked about last week, I think that poll was really significant, and it really lends credence or gives more evidence to a lot of things we've been talking about on this show and over on the Weekly Reload podcast for a couple of years now, right? About how this gun sales surge, all these new gun owners coming in to the community are potentially going to affect politics and things down the line. But you know, also just, you know, evidence of that actual trend, because it's, you know, they showed a 10-point increase in gun ownership over the last 10 years among American voters. So very significant. So we had the pollster who actually did the poll, one of the pollsters from the company that performed the poll for NBC News was on the show. And so he broke down all the intricacies of it. And I think there's actually some really interesting stuff in there, especially about the politics and how much partisanship affects people's views on guns, even if they own a gun or have a gun in their house. So yeah, we really got into a lot of that. And if people were intrigued by last week's episode of our show, they should definitely check this one out too.
Absolutely. And just anecdotally speaking, of course, on my end, I feel like a lot of the people that I've known for years and had discussions about various political issues, I'm noticing a lot more, I guess you'd call it sort of a diversity of thought, in as much as you get people that are pro-abortion and pro-Second Amendment, or they don't sort of fit neatly into either of the major political parties wheelhouses, as it were. I kind of think that's a good thing. I like the idea that people are thinking freely and not just sort of one issue voters. But anyway, moving on, speaking of politics, over in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, brought a bill and to the floor, or attempted to have this bill brought to the floor of the Senate. But as Stephen will tell us, it wasn't exactly what it appeared to be to the average person who isn't necessarily that versed in politics. So talk to us about what he did and why he did it and the way he did it.
Yeah. This one's probably going to be pretty interesting if you don't follow the intricacies of how the Senate operates, because Schumer brought a bill to the floor. It was a bill called Senate Bill 25. It's the assault weapons ban that Dianne Feinstein, the late senator from California, has basically introduced every year for the last like 30 years since the last one expired, some version of it. And he brought that to the floor for a vote, but I guess a vote is the wrong term here, because what he did was bring it for unanimous consent. So he was basically asking for every senator to agree to adopt this bill in order for it to go forward. So this is a way to avoid, going through all of the steps of traditional legislation, to bypass all that. You can do it in the Senate if everybody agrees to do that. And so it happens sometimes, right? For stuff that's not very controversial, or if they've already worked out a deal where that's part of the deal, that'll happen just to sort of speed things along. But obviously it's not really a way to pass controversial legislation like an assault weapons ban, that targets obviously popular firearms like the AR-15 and other similar firearms, semi-automatic center fire rifles and handguns that accept detachable magazines and have certain features like pistol grips and telescoping stocks, things of that nature. Probably a lot of people listening to the show understand what the definition is, even though it actually does change from state to state depending on right. which law you look at. But regardless, you know, that's obviously a very, very controversial policy in America. And so asking for unanimous consent to pass it is not a way tactically to actually get the law passed. Does that make sense? Right. Schumer is doing this not knowing that somebody is going to object. All it takes is one person in the Senate to object. And then they'd have to, if they wanted to move forward, they'd have to go back through the whole legislative process again. And basically, overcome a filibuster and get 60 votes, that sort of thing. And the reason I think he did it this way is, one, because he wanted to, it's mainly for political reasons, like, to show that he tried to get something through. He put it on the floor,
but not really a good faith effort, right? I mean, honestly,
it's more of a stunt. Yeah, certainly. Yeah. You could frame it that way. Anytime you see either party put up something for unanimous consent that is obviously not unanimously agreed upon, it's basically just done as a way to check a box, I think. But the other reason you would do it this way too is because of course you could bring up the actual legislation for just a normal vote and have a roll call and get everyone on record and do it that way and see if you can get the votes needed. See if you can get 50. And then if there's a filibuster, see if you can get to 60, right? Mm-hmm. To break the filibuster. That's how the Senate works. But the benefit of bringing up a unanimous consent proposal on this bill is that you don't have to put everybody on record. So the people who want to be on record, to be noticed supporting or opposing this bill, can do that by going down to the Senate and giving speeches. And you saw a number of Democrats and Republicans do exactly that. They're basically the Democrats and Republicans you expect to want to be out there talking about this one way or the other. You know, Chris Murphy from Connecticut. You had Mike Lee from Utah on the other side. You had the people who are, this is part of their policy positions that they talk about a lot.
Right.
What you didn't see, and this is the key for why you do it this way, where a lot of the moderates or the people who are facing tough re-elections go out there and talk about this, because they didn't have to, right? They didn't have to make a speech. They didn't have to put down a vote. They could if they wanted to, but they didn't have to. And so it's a way of saying, well, we as a, you know, Chuck Schumer, me, I'm trying to get this bill passed, but also I don't need to put, you know, my Angus King or some Kyrsten Sinema or John Tester or any number of these other Democrats on record about this headed into election. Now, as a caveat to that, John Tester, the Democratic senator from Montana, who's facing a tough re-election bid this year, did actually tell me, tell us over at the Reload, that he opposes an assault weapons ban. So the other thing that you avoid too, besides putting some of these vulnerable members on blast, right, forcing them to take a vote, is that if you don't have majority support for this bill, that doesn't, you know, it's not made obvious because you don't actually have to take a vote on it. And it sure right. seems like they don't have majority vote based on, if you look at the co-sponsor list, there are 44 co-sponsors of the solvents ban that they put up. And then there's obviously the sponsor themselves, which Dianne Feinstein has passed away, but it's presumably the person who's replaced her probably also supports this legislation. So you got 45 people saying that all you're on record that they support it. That leaves 6 Democrats, or at least senators who caucus with Democrats. There's a couple independents that caucus with the Democrats, mm-hmm. Who don't support it. Now, you know, if you go down this math, this trail of math here, one thing that's interesting is this happened about a week after, 4 other more moderate Democrats introduced a new sort of rebranded version of an assault weapons ban. It's not the bill that got voted on today or put up for a vote today or put up mm-hmm. for unanimous consent today. It's an entirely different bill that actually hasn't even made it into the congressional bill tracker yet. So it doesn't have a number or a list of all the potential co-sponsors. It's called Go Safe. It's gas operated semi-automatic firearms exclusion act. I don't remember what the E stands for, so forgive me. But it's a ban.
How many interns do they lock into a room and feed them pizza and say, "Don't come out until you come up with a cool sounding name for our bill"? Is that how does that? As an aside, I'm serious. Who?
That's a good question. That's actually a really good question. I don't know if the senators come up with these themselves, or it's probably staff, because staff is usually the ones who actually write these things, but staff and lobbyists generally, you know, templates get sent around, and it's why a lot of bills are very similar to each other. They might have minor changes, but they're pretty similar. Right. So this bill is basically just a rebrand of an assolvents ban. It's a little bit broader in some ways. We won't go too in depth into it. We have a whole piece at the Reload members piece that explains everything that it does, but it's very similar to an assolvents ban. And so three of the six Democrats who haven't signed on to the Feinstein assolvents ban sponsored this new ban. So maybe, you know, maybe they have those, maybe you could count on those three to vote on some sort of assolvents ban. And so that gets you to 48. Of course, that still leaves you three short. And with Tester saying he won't vote for it, you know, that puts you at, you need to get the other two, which are, I think it's Cantwell in Washington and then, Sinema in Arizona, your senator. And they haven't said anything one way or the other, because they don't have to, because that's the nature of this sort of unanimous consent vote. They don't have to go on record if they don't want to.
So in other news, in news that actually makes a difference in the world, since this whole, all these ban bills are purely theoretical at this point, or there's nothing actually moving forward with them. You mentioned before we hit the record button, something that I hadn't even heard yet, about a case involving the legal age for people to be able to buy a handgun. Where was that? What happened? And just tell our listeners what's going on.
Yeah, it's actually even a little more complicated than that, because it's the legal age to be able to buy a handgun from a licensed dealer. Because technically, in most states, they're at least under federal law, there are some state laws that ban that. So, of course, don't take this as legal advice. Check with your local local laws. Under federal law, there's no ban on 18 to 20 year olds owning handguns or buying them from private parties or being given them as gifts by, you know, their parents or something like that. But there is a ban on them buying directly from licensed dealers. So that's what was struck down by a federal judge on Friday. Right. And so that's pretty significant, right? He found that there was no historical tradition of restricting gun access to 18 to 20 year olds in that way. In fact, there's sort of a tradition, it's kind of the opposite, because that age group was required to serve in militias and they were required to show up with their own firearms, to produce their own firearms to serve with. So the presumption is that they had to own those guns in the first place. But that has a pretty significant effect, right? That's a nationwide effect on anyone 18 to 20 years old. Now, the ruling was not stayed by the judge. So in theory, it goes into effect right away. However, one thing to note, I think, is that DOJ has not said that they're appealing this ruling, but I would imagine that they absolutely are going to appeal it and that they're going to request a stay on the ruling while it's under appeal, and that they will probably be granted that stay because this law has been around for quite a while. And that's usually how these things go. Courts tend to allow the status quo to stay in place as a challenge moves forward. Sometimes it doesn't happen that way, but that's usually how it goes. So if you're 18 to 20 year old and you're listening to this episode, if you run out to your gun store right now, by the way, licensed gun dealers, that's every gun store and anyone who sells a gun for a living. So if you go to gun shows, a lot of those people are also licensed by the federal government to sell guns. So most people who sell guns, anyone who sells guns for a living is going to be licensed. But yeah, don't run out to your local gun store necessarily. I mean, call them up and see what they say, see what Nix is telling them.
Not gotten the memo. Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about this before, right? These are significant rulings. They're really important legally, but they don't always immediately translate into an effect in real life, if that makes sense. So I would expect that's what's going to happen here. Even though there wasn't a stay issued right away on this ruling, I would expect one will be soon.
Very good. So, all right, folks, those of you who don't like to hear about sports, this is your warning that we're going to talk about sports just for a moment here.
We don't have to talk about it this week.
I hate to bring it up, But as you may or may not know, John Correa, our owner and founder of Active Self Protection, is from the Bay Area and is a huge Niners fan and would fire me if I didn't rub it in slash at least bring it up. Or, hey, I'm a Commanders fan. I got no room to talk.
Yeah, just keep in mind, Mike's a Commanders fan, so... All bragging vicariously through John as
I mean, as a Niners fan. Bring it up. I'm in trouble. I'm the one getting fired. I'm the one losing my job for crying out
loud. I will say that
you think it was a fluke, or was that just the birds just have an off night, or what?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think every Philly fan is always worried that the team is not. You know, we always think that they're going to lose every game. When they do lose a game, even if they are 10-2 and still have the best record in the league. Philly goes from cocky to wildly depressed, and those are the only two settings for Philly fans. So, you know, yeah, it was really ugly to watch, and I don't feel any better about it today on Wednesday. So I will say that Niners fans, man, they're really starting to feel like Cowboys fans to me.
Well, see, that's the thing. As someone who is a Commanders fan, you know, for growing up for years and years, man, Philly was as hated as. And it's, by the way, it's sports hate, folks. It's not real hate. I don't really hate people from Philadelphia or Dallas, but you know, the Philly fans and the teams were hated for different reasons. The Cowboys, the Dallas fans, were just sort of cocky for whatever, and I still don't know why they were always so cocky, because they weren't always all that good. But the Philly fans were just. Mean. They'll throw an unopened can of beer at your head if you show up in, you know, the opposing team's jersey. I don't know if that's true anymore or not at the link. You know, would I be assaulted if I showed up in my Sam Howell jersey?
I don't think the average person would, but there's certainly some trash people that do stuff like that on occasion. You know, we don't have the 700 level like the Vet, you know, used to have back in the day, but. Yep. But yeah, there's still going to be some, you know, I don't think you should physically try to hurt somebody in any circumstance over a sports game, obviously. But,
you know, I'm headed out to
SoFi. I'm all right with yelling at you or booing you. Yeah, I would do that if you showed up and I was there.
My son and
I mean, I'd do that anyway.
17th for the Rams Commanders game. I bought those tickets well before the season started. Completely meaningless game. I think it's actually means something for the Rams, but. Good thing for the Rams, they'll have it. That'll be an easy Sunday for them. But if you know, if everything holds up the way it's been going.
Well, I just think the Niners fans and their team. Now, look, they won, so what can you say?
Right.
You talk big and then you show up and play big. That's fair game. You know, fair play. But yeah, they haven't won anything since the 90s, just like the Cowboys. And you know what would have sucked? Losing a blowout. This week would have sucked more if it was the NFC Championship and we lost in a blowout.
But that's true.
So I get why they are very upset about last year.
Could be a rematch in January.
It could be. I don't want. You know, the Niners are extremely talented. So I'd prefer to have the easiest team to play. But it probably, if we do make it back there, it probably will have to play the Niners at some point. So I guess we'll probably be slated for a rematch. We'll see how it goes.
It's like every time I see Chase Young's beautiful locks of hair coming out from underneath that helmet. It's like seeing your ex-girlfriend with her new boyfriend. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're like,
you guys sold him off cheap too. All those guys. You just,
I
that's unfair. You undercut the rest of us.
I trust this ownership group.
We would have taken Chase Young.
You know, they own the Sixers and a few other things. So hopefully
Sixers haven't made it past with the second round in a very long time.
Yeah, I'm aware. All right, folks, that is all. I got to go eat dinner. That's all the time we have right now. Thank you for tuning in. Do me a favor. Go over to thereload.com, and consider getting a membership. Steven relies on his subscribers and their fees, dues. What did we decide it was called?
Membership dues.
Membership dues to do his important work. And, you know, no one else is doing what he's doing. So go give him a look over there. Steven, as always, sir, you have the last word.
Absolutely.